You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Some dogs look at you like you're insane.
Notice your dog's intelligence is different to yours.
We're killing our dogs. Wild and Woolly welcome wagon.
The outside of a dog is really, really good. The inside of a person.
Hello, and welcome to episode 81 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have an interview about Tellington Touch.
It's not rocket science. You know, you don't have to have healing hands to do it. All you need is an open mind and, you know, and your hands. And everybody can learn to do this work.
We have the Dogcast Radio news and an article about our Bichon Frise star's idiosyncrasies. But before all that, we have a great interview about a specific way of using clicker training. In episode 73 of Dogcast Radio, Aaron Clayton gave us an excellent interview debunking some of the myths associated with clicking. If you still think the clicker is to get the dog's attention or give him an instruction, have a listen to what Aaron had to say. Today, we speak to trainer Pam Dennison about something else that's possible with clicker training, shaping. So, just what is shaping?
Shaping is very similar to the hot and cold game, where, you know, you're getting close to something, and or you're getting too far and somebody says, you know, hot, 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 cold, 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 warm, that type of thing. Except with the dogs, we don't do cold because we don't want to demotivate the dog. So we only use warm and hot. And we do that with the clicker. So, for instance, let's say you want to teach riding a skateboard.
Yeah.
You would click the warm for approaching the skateboard. You know, you'd click for looking at the skateboard. You could click for sniffing it, then putting a foot on it or jumping over it or walking around it. And each one of those little warms or approximations, you would click and reward that. And then eventually they would just, you'd start to raise your criteria. And let's say instead of just sniffing it, if you just get that for a while, you say, okay, let's see if we can get something more. So let's see if you can get a foot touch on the skateboard. So you'd hold out for that. And then maybe 2 feet and then push it. And then maybe 3 feet. You know, and then you'd kind of go on from there, depending on what behavior that you're training.
Yeah. So with warm and hot, is that just a difference in your mind or the closeness to the action? There's not a difference in the treats that you give the dog?
No, there's no difference in the treats. There's no difference in the click. Although for hot or very, very hot or when you're screaming, hot, 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 you know, I would give a jackpot. You know, or the first time that the dog, let's say the dog was stuck on sniffing the skateboard, and then the first time they actually, like, lifted a paw or put a paw on it, I would give a jackpot for that to show them that, yes, you are still on the right direction.
Yes, that entails giving him more than one treat, does it?
Correct.
Right.
So, you know, when they're warm, they get one treat. When they're warmer, they get one treat. When they're hot, they get, especially the first time they're hot, then they'd get a jackpot, and then you kind of ease off on that. Okay, well, now I want a little bit more. You know, and then you want boiling, and boiling is, you know, we'll call that, that's the end behavior.
Yes.
And, you know, the first couple times they absolutely get mega jackpots, and I do clap and cheer and, you know, jump up and down and
yeah,
you know, get the dog all excited. And
yeah. Oh. Now, how does the dog react to this? Because, you know, if he's been getting clicks for sniffing and then you suddenly decide, well, okay, I'm going to hold out for,
right,
you know, the foot right lift or something like that. How usually does the dog react to this?
You know, it depends on the dog.
Mm-hmm.
You might get a few different reactions. Any one of them is totally fine. You might get a dog that says, okay, well, I sniffed it. And then they look up like, where's the click? And then they'll just keep trying. You know, they'll sniff it for longer or they'll get a little frustrated. Sometimes they start barking at you like, hello, are you broken? or they will, sometimes they'll walk away and say, all right, you are broken, I'm leaving. And that's okay. Or sometimes, you know, they're just thinking and they need to walk away. And then very often the dog will come back and then look at you and then put their foot on the board.
Yeah.
You know, or they start barking and then they put their foot on the board, you know, or they'll jump over it or whatever. And then I see that with all different behaviors. Sometimes, especially the first behavior that you're free shaping, they will get frustrated a little faster. And they'll try less because they don't understand that they should try things. So the first behavior you train is always the hardest. Once
yeah.
you can get them through the process, the thinking process, then every appreciate behavior after that is so much easier.
Yeah, yeah.
But the first one is always the hardest.
Yeah. Now, I'm just thinking, as, you know, not a professional trainer, it's going to be quite daunting, I would think, if your dog just walks away. So,
yes.
But you just let them do that.
Yes. Now, what I do, though, for the first behavior is I try to make it something simple. You can actually, there's two different things that you can do to make it simple.
Mm-hmm.
You can just sit down on the floor with a bucket of food and a clicker. And of course, your dog will come over and you can click absolutely anything they do. You can click an ear flick. You can click a bark. You can click a lip lick. You can click anything, a blink, a head turn, anything that they, any physical movement that they do, you can click and treat that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way that you can start the free shaping process. Some dogs find that a little bit hard to understand, like they really don't quite get what you're clicking. Another thing that you can do, this is the one I do most of the time, although sometimes I'll run across a dog or two that doesn't get this, so we'll go to the click any body movement whatsoever. I will teach them to wipe their feet on a towel.
Hmm.
And I find that's actually one of the easiest behaviors to start with. It's a little bit of cheating in the fact that what you do is you just put a towel on the ground and you put a bunch of smelly treats underneath the towel. And then you encourage them to like, oh, what's that? What's that? What's that? You know, and you tap the towel and you get them to sniff where the cookies are underneath the towel. And you click for any kind of sniffing, you know, sniffing, 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 and then you click and treat. And I find usually, sometimes, I mean, I've had some dogs start to pot right away because some dogs are more foot-oriented anyway, you know, like terriers, you know, I mean, they dig. So,
yes.
You know, using their feet comes very naturally. So I would start with the sniffing and then, you know, click and treat the sniffing, and or if they bite the towel, click and treat that. It's not exactly what we want, but it's close. And again, you just kind of hold out and you wait for a foot. You know, sometimes they lie down, okay, I give up, you know, and you just kind of wait it out. Or sometimes you take them away from the prop and then come back to it.
Yeah.
You know, you can even just say, okay, let's go. And then you just walk away for a minute and then go right back. And then they kind of like, oh, okay. It kind of resets them.
Yes.
So you can do that. And then, of course, you click for, you know, any kind of foot movement, you know, because a lot of dogs will paw things to get underneath, you know, and if they want the treats, or if you've got a dog that's not really that treat motivated and they don't really, you know, they'll eat treats, but, you know, okay, well, I can't get to it, so forget it. And if they're ball motivated, you can put a ball underneath too. And that works for, you know, for dogs that are like both, but they're really toy motivated. So put a toy underneath the towel and then you click and treat, or click and throw another toy and then get that one back and then do it again.
Yeah.
And then eventually you've got wipe your feet.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
So I usually start with that one just because it seems to be a relatively easy one to get. And then of course, as your dog gets more experience and as you get more experience, and I always like to start with things that don't really have much meaning, because if you don't know what you're seeing and you don't know what, like, for instance, if you don't know that sniffing is, you know, is one of the first approximations to riding a skateboard, then you won't be clicking it. I mean, if you're expecting the dog to just hop on and ride it, you know, then that means you don't really quite know how to break down a behavior.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a good thing to, it's always a good thing to start on something that really is not that important. Because if you mess it up, it's okay.
Yes, yeah. Now, the other thing is with shaping, is it okay to sort of lure and, you know, suggest things, you know, as you've said, sort of, you know, when you say, oh, what's this, that you sort of point and show them, or do you leave it to the dog to think it through?
Pretty much only on the first free-shaped behavior, I will help a little bit. But after that, I don't help. You know, it's just in the beginning, you know, like with wipe your feet, I will put food underneath the towel. So in a way, that's helping. Or, you know, yeah, what's that? Because they don't know to look, you know, under the towel. They don't know what's under there.
Mm.
But pretty much only on the first behavior, it's really not necessary. And you know, every dog's a little different. Some dogs get it a little faster than others. But they all get it. And truly, once they get that first one, you've opened the floodgate.
Mm.
And they just, oh, they just embrace free shaping. The dogs just love it. And, you know, but of course you need to learn to raise your criteria quickly. Otherwise, you'll get stuck on beginning steps and you'll never get off of it.
Yeah.
So that's very, very important, too. You have to know, number one, how to break down a behavior and when and how to raise your criteria. And sometimes when to go back and lower your criteria, because that's important, too.
Mm.
You know, sometimes the dog just needs a little extra help. I'm not really quite sure. And it's like, it's okay every now and then to backtrack.
Yeah.
And to click, like, let's say your dog puts a foot on the skateboard and then they kind of get lost after that. And so it's okay to go back to sniffing if it's been, you know, if it's been a minute or two where they haven't done anything, where they just kind of lay down and stare at you for a minute. It's okay to backtrack, and it's okay to go back to click the sniff maybe one or two more times, but then you've got to raise your criteria.
Yeah.
So in answer, it's okay to help. I pretty much just only on the first behavior.
Okay, and then I guess because the dog's making his own mind up, that's going to help him remember.
Well, yeah, because they're problem solving, and they're—I mean, you know—let's face it, we all learn better when we learn it ourselves.
Yeah,
you know, you make a mistake, and it has, well, and, you know, consequences—not good ones, maybe. Well, we know. Okay, I won't do that again, or good things too. Like, oh, that worked. I'll do that again.
Yes. Yeah. Now you've brought out a DVD. About yes. shaping. So
yes.
What will people find on the DVD?
Okay. Well, first of all, it is 4 hours long.
Oh, wow.
And it's a set of two DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And the company that put it together was originally only supposed to be an hour and 15 minutes. And when she was editing it, she decided there was so much good stuff she couldn't bear to cut it. So she made it a 4-hour DVD. And we do wipe your feet, grind your own toenails, go around objects, nose target your hand, nose target an object, close the door, ride the skateboard, knock, knock, knock means go to your crate, or, you know, the doorbell rings means go to your crate, which is a wonderful thing when you've got multiple dog households and things.
Mm.
You know, or if you've got, you know, an aggressive or reactive dog, it just makes everybody's life easier if knock, 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 it's just automatically the dog will just run to their crate instead of aggress at the door. A retrieve, cheek, which means rest your cheek on my hand.
No.
Bow. Let's see. We also had chin, which is rest your chin in my hand. The tire, which is not the agility tire, it's basically, and you can do this with any object. You can do it with a heavy-duty box or a big bowl or, you know, an overturned bowl, where they put their front feet in or on something, and then they rotate their hind end around it, and it gives them hind end awareness for agility. We do have the teeter. I do have, a lot of these things are actually kind of agility prep things. like go around objects and ride the skateboard. It kind of gets them used to things moving under their feet, that type of thing. And then we did have the teeter. We had weave poles, had to free shape the entrance, say your prayers, go out for utility, go out for the directed jumping, muzzle training, healing, and then shaping the real world, and where you can free shape anything. I mean, yeah. If there's anything in front of you, free shape it. So I show you how to do that. And also say your prayers.
Oh.
You know, where the dog puts their paws up and puts their head down. I mean, I love that behavior. It's so
yeah,
cute.
Yeah.
And so we have that. And it's a great behavior. Oh, and muzzle training.
Hmm.
Because I really believe it's extremely important that every dog learn how to accept gladly a muzzle. Because there are times when, you know, a dog gets injured and they're in pain and they're lashing out and you're trying to help them and you can't because they're lashing out. So I just feel it's very, very, very important that every dog learn how to be muzzled. And
yes, yeah.
it really takes no time at all. And I just think that every dog should know that. So that's why I threw it in, because I think it's an important life skill.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you hope the dog never needs it, but it's nice to have it when they do.
Yes. Yeah. And to have thought it through before you get to the point of needing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Because then you just hold the muzzle out and they stick their head in.
Mm.
I mean, how easy is that? And then you hook it up and you're good to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then everybody's protected and then you can help the dog.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's actually shaping is something then that we can teach tricks, if you like, you know, and as you say, these behaviors that you say, wow, that's good, but also everyday, you know, useful things, if you like.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the things that we were training here were for agility, for competition obedience. Yeah, certainly some, you know, some parlor tricks. You know, if you've got a dog that does therapy work, you know, you want more than just a dog, I would think you'd want more than just a dog that loves to just be pet by strangers. You know, I thought you'd like something else too.
Mm.
You know, to show off and make people happy. And also some of these things can be used for freestyle as well.
Yes.
Weaving between your legs, going around you, forward or backward. You know, a lot of different things.
Yeah.
A lot of different sports. And just, you know, on a cold, rainy, snowy, windy day or a day that's brutally hot and you don't want to go outside and your dog is just driving you crazy, well, you can't get them physically tired, at least get them mentally tired.
Yes.
And it also works well. Free shaping is great for, let's say the dog just had surgery and you have to kind of keep them quiet and, you know, in the house and that type of thing. Well, you can just do some easy free shaping.
Yeah. So it's yeah. a great way of thinking to get the dog introduced to, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And you can, I mean, there's a lot of stupid things you can train. I mean, I've trained, one of the first behaviors I trained my dogs to do was I just stood in the middle of the living room and I free shaped them to go up on the couch and lie down.
Hmm.
And I didn't say anything. I just kind of stood there and looked at the couch.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all did it. So, I mean, you can do anything. It doesn't even have to be anything that will lead to any other behavior.
Yeah.
You can
yeah.
do absolutely anything. You
yeah.
go under a chair, go around a chair, put your feet up on a chair. You know, you can teach hind end awareness. You can teach them to target with their back feet, which actually is a good agility thing for teaching contact.
Yes.
You know, if you're teaching the two on, two off method, which I do with my dogs, I've tried using the lid method, and I can't get my dogs to stop retrieving the lid. So forget that. I'm doing two on, two off. And you can do that, too. You can just do that with a step. You know, teach them to put their back foot on the step.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of things that you can do without it, even any special props or anything. But
yeah.
free shaping is just a wonderful thing. I also find that it really gets the dog into the process of learning. And what happens is they learn everything much faster, you know, no matter what it is, whether it's, you know, real complicated stuff like the scent discrimination and utility. You know, they just, because that's a really hard behavior. That's probably one of the hardest ones to train.
Yeah.
And it just makes everything so much easier. The dogs learn everything so much faster because they're in.
Yes.
You know, they're in the game. They're ready to play. And it's just great.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've found that any training I've done, you know, whether it's been agility or heel work to music or, you know, whatever it is, it all contributes to the other training you're doing, and they progress at that, you know, because of what else you've done. And I guess it's the same with getting them thinking. As you say, they're just in the mood to, you know, they know how to think, don't they? They've problem solved.
Right, exactly, exactly. And, you know, they watch you more carefully. They're like, okay, what are we doing today? What are we doing today? Because everything is so much fun.
Yeah.
That they're like, okay, all right, I think I got this.
Yeah.
You know, and they do. They just, it really blows my mind. I mean, when I first started doing free shaping, I really thought it was stupid. It's like, well, why don't you just lure the dog? And so, but then I saw what some of my friends had taught their dogs, and I'm like, all right, I'm in, I'll try it. And of course, I was an instant convert.
Yeah.
And, you know, because some of these things you really can't train, you can't lure your dogs to do.
No.
You know, you can't lure them to ride a skateboard and feel okay about it.
No, no.
You know, teaching your dog to lick his lips, you can't really lure that. I mean,
no.
I guess you could put peanut butter on their face or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But I actually never really even thought of that until after I did the video.
Yeah.
Because there's also that, you know, clicking your dog for licking their lips, which is real cute. And then you call it yummy. And it's yummy. Is that yummy? Yummy. And then they lick their lips. It's very cute.
Oh, excellent.
And so, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can train each thing. But I love the free shaping process, and I love to watch them figure things out. And, you know, and every dog is different. You know, some dogs are just really focused, and if they get it, you know, not wrong, but if they don't do exactly what you want, they're like really thinking about it. And other dogs just quit. All right, fine. You're broken. I'm leaving. But I like both kinds of dogs, because then the quitter dog, you have to make your approximations even smaller. And don't raise your criteria too high too quickly.
Yeah.
You know, to keep them in the game. Or sometimes they're just like, okay, I quit. But if you just stay there by your prop, sometimes they'll be like, you know, maybe they'll come back after a minute or two.
Yeah.
You know, okay, all right, I'll play. So it just kind of depends. But
yeah,
it really gives you a good feel for your dog, and vice versa. You know, it gives them a good feel for you too.
Yeah.
But I just love the process. Love the process.
Yeah. Where can people find out more about you and the DVD and your books?
Okay. My website is www.positivedogs.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it is plural, D-O-G-S,
mm-hmm.
like in Sam. And I have actually all of my books and DVDs are on there. The new DVD is The Magic of Shaping, Explore the Possibilities. And that is available at Tawzer, T-A-W-Z-E-R, dogvideos.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that are selling them. And I think Dogwise is also selling them.
Okay. Thank you ever so much for that, Pam.
All righty. Thank you.
There are both of those links on the Dogcast Radio website if you'd like to find out more. I know Buddy loves it when I get the clicker out, and it's a great way to get your dog thinking. And as Pam said, if it could mean getting out of a walk in the snow without compromising my dog, I'm all for it. Fox Terriers are born with about four times as much original sin in them as other dogs. Jerome K. Jerome. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. Why is a dog better than a man?
I'm sure I'm going to regret asking this, but okay, I don't know. Why is a dog better than a man?
No, it's not one of those jokes. It's the latest quote from Jennifer Aniston. Not content with starring in the smash hit film Marley and Me, which focuses on the life of a naughty Labrador, Jennifer is now saying that the best relationships she has are with her dogs. She shares her life with Norman and Dolly and insists that while men may drift in and out of her life, her dogs are always there for her.
That sounds fair. And talking of fair, when it comes to treats, dogs seem to know what's fair. And if they see that another dog is getting a better reward, they may stop cooperating. That's according to some Austrian research. The team carried out experiments working with two dogs side by side, asking each dog to perform a simple behaviour, and then giving the dog a piece of sausage, a piece of bread, or nothing. They found that, surprisingly perhaps, the dogs performed as well for the bread as for the sausage. But if no reward at all was offered, while a dog beside them was still given treats, the untreated dog was likely to refuse to offer the requested behaviour.
So the moral of that story is, treat your dog fairly or he just might go on strike.
And don't forget, the same could be true about the man in your life too.
Now you're really treading on thin ice. Somewhat like the dog in our next story, a black Labrador from the UK, Bella, got trapped out in the middle of a frozen lake recently. But gallant firefighters used an inflatable walkway to reach her and bring her back to safety. Meanwhile, Fang, a young husky also from the UK, jumped over what he thought was an ordinary garden wall. Unknown to Fang, the other side of the wall was a 30-foot drop. Luckily, Fang landed on a narrow ledge about a third of the way down, but the poor dog was stuck until Fire Brigade rose to the occasion and the ledge and came to his rescue.
Cats and dogs can be best friends or sworn enemies, but have you ever known a cat who helped train a dog? Well, in a guide dog centre in Essex, in the UK, brother and sister cats Leo and Nina are a vital part of the team. The cats have been hard at work at the centre since arriving there as kittens 8 years ago. So, just what do? They simply have to behave normally around the dogs as they go through training, and if the dogs show no reaction to the cats, they pass with flying colours. But if they show a reaction, they still need more work before they are allowed to lead anyone around.
And finally, Scottish actor Kevin McKidd got more than he bargained for when his dogs behaved normally. The star of TV series Journeyman and films Trainspotting and Maid of Honour hadn't got round to having his dogs neutered, and so guess what? His male and female dogs did what dogs do and produced a litter of 7 pups. The family kept one of the puppies and managed to find homes for the other 6. And the adult dogs have now had the necessary visit to the vet. But it just shows there are certain things in life you should not put off.
And that's all from us today on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
A dandy looks at you as though he's forgotten more than you will ever know. An old Scottish saying about dandy Dinmont Terriers. On to a fascinating subject now, Tellington Touch. What exactly is it? What does it involve? What kind of dogs benefit from it? To find all this out and more, I spoke to Tony Shelbourne, who's a Tellington Touch Companion Animal Practitioner 3. So what exactly does that mean?
That just means that I'm qualified in Tellington Touch up to a particular level. So everybody starts, once they're qualified, as a practitioner level 1, which means you can run one-day workshops and work with clients, give little talks. And then it works up the ranking, really. So by the time you get to a level 3, what happens is you get invited to be that. And it's like one step down from an instructor.
And I suppose the other question to ask is, what is Tellington Touch?
Ah, the good old question. Tellington Touch is just a really unique way of working with animals. So it's really good for rehabilitation. It's good for just fear-based issues. It's good for training method. It's just good for so many things. The whole principle of the work is that posture affects behaviour. So if you're out of balance physically, then you'll be out of balance mentally and emotionally as well. So what we often see with dogs is they hold tension patterns in their body, and those tension patterns make them behave in particular ways. So, for example, if you're tight around your hindquarters and your tail, it often means that you are going to be reactive to, say, noises, fearful situations. You might be fear aggressive. That all the kind of fear issues are held in that area. If you're quite emotional, which often is linked into a fear-based issue, you get really tight in your gums and your lips, or you'll get very dry gums, just like we do when we're really stressed. And there's their types of stressy behaviours, unlike ours, which might be eating more or not eating or chewing on nails or smoking for some of us. For the dogs, it will manifest itself in things like barking, chewing, nipping, biting, and all these types of behaviours. So when you look at a dog and you look at its posture and you feel through its body, you can pretty much guess the kind of reactions it's going to have in different situations just because of how its body is telling it to be. So what we do is come along and release those tension patterns, help the dogs to be in the best posture they can possibly be. And when their body posture improves, then their behaviour starts to diminish or disappear without having to do a lot of sort of behaviour modification training. They become more confident, they'll be able to deal with situations that they previously thought were scary. So they just become more rounded, balanced individuals as they feel better physically. And that, because like I say, it links into their mental and emotion. It's a bit like us having a bad hair day. You know, we start to think we look really ugly and,
yeah,
you know, you don't want to see anybody and all that stuff. And then you wash your hair, have a bar of chocolate, you feel much better. But with the dogs, once we sort their posture out, they just become feeling much, much better, much confident.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I knew about the sort of the massage or the sort of the hands-on aspects of it, but it isn't just that, it's much more, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. There's sort of three elements to the work. What you're talking about is the T-touches, the specialised way of moving the skin in circles, lifts and stroke. And we only ever work skin deep, which is why it's so easy and safe to teach anyone how to do this work. You don't need to know anatomy and physiology. You know, you're not going to do any damage. And that's a really important part of the work. However, there's other parts. There's things like the groundwork. It's a set of obstacles we put on the floor and we ask the dogs to walk through very slowly, accurately, in balance. It's about moving their bodies again in a non-habitual way. So moving the skin and the body in ways that the dog wouldn't normally move them. And that will shorten and enhance learning. And we're able to then to get them to focus. The groundwork's really good for coordination, cooperation, focus, being able to be in a situation they previously thought was scary. So, for example, if they're frightened of other dogs, we can start to introduce a dog on the outside of the groundwork. And they're so focused on the groundwork, they've got another job to do. And then they suddenly realise that big, scary dog over there actually isn't as scary as they thought it was. So they start to change their responses to it. So a dog that previously would have lunged and barked at a dog might choose to sit and look back calmly, might choose to turn away from the dog, and get on with its life. It's almost like we're teaching the dogs to just remain calm and teaching them to have a different opinion of the situation they're in. And then the third element of the work can be all the different bits of equipment that we use. So we put lots of things on dogs, things like body wraps. Now that's like a stretchy bandage. And that's put on the dogs in different designs. And it can be a very comforting feeling. It's a bit like having a portable hug. So they carry around this portable hug with them. So instead of having to get their self-confidence off you all the time, and I'm sure there's lots of people out there who recognise the term what I call Velcro dog, the ones that are stuck to you all the time, the really kinky dogs, the dogs that won't let you go to the bathroom without them coming with you. You know, these dogs can be really benefit from the body wrap. And it's also a fantastic tool for noise phobia. So, you know, once you really get into those fireworks seasons, and we know that they kind of are increasing through the year, can be a really useful tool to help the dog settle and remain calm when that scary noises are going on. Or we might use it for body awareness. So if the dogs are maybe agility dogs, and they might knock a pole down, or they can't quite get the mobility through their bodies to get the flying changes through the weeds, can really help them to figure that out and see how to use their bodies. Or simply if a dog's pulling on the lead, you know, it's out of balance physically, we need to teach it to have the weight on all four feet rather than leaning forward. And, you know, we'll use harnesses and halters just like traditional trainers, but we often use in a slightly different way. So instead of using the halter simply as an aid to stop the dog pulling, we just use it for power steering. So we would stop the dog pulling by balancing it through the body and other methods, and the horsey would be used just to ask them to turn their head and ask them to flex through the body rather than stopping the pulling action. So there's loads and loads of bits of equipment we put on the dogs. It's quite funny sometimes how we dress them up, but it really does seem to help.
Yeah, so it's useful sort of from a physical and an emotional point of view, and as you said, for sort of agility or something if you're competing, but also with, you know, day-to-day training, it sounds like, as well.
Yeah, because often what happens, you know, I have a lot of clients who come to me and say, no, I tried a training class and I was either thrown out, I was told my dog was untrainable, or for whatever reason they've not suited a training class. And that's because the dogs aren't in a space where they can listen and learn, because they're so stressed. And if you think about a time when you've been stressed and someone tries to give you directions, you often can't take the information and you ask them to write it down instead. And it's exactly the same for the dogs. They can't take instruction from you because they're just so into those stress-related fear responses. So the T-Touch can really help to settle them, to calm them, to focus them, to get them to actually start to learn. So it's why we call this the touch that teaches, because we're teaching them actually to put them in a learning state. They can then take the information on. So T-Touch is really good to use in combination with clicker training, reward-based training. I mean, any kind of, you know, positive training, it's really good to link it in, link the two together. And they'll both become much more powerful because of the other one. So we can put them in that learning state and then they can learn those lessons. And it really helps dogs to reach their full potential.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is it suitable for all dogs? You know, is there any age or size of dog that it wouldn't work for?
Oh, it's brilliant for absolutely anybody. I mean, we start from the very tiny puppies. And if you start T-Touch on them early, even if they don't have any problems, what you're doing is helping them to mature into a very rounded, confident, adaptable adult. You know, often T-Touch puppies, they don't get, you know, those kind of teenage angst stages. They seem to be much more coordinated, much bolder in lots of different situations. And as they grow up and they go through their fear periods, or you have to introduce them to new situations, it's a really good way of helping them cope with anything that might be perceived to them to be quite scary. And as they get older, like I say, most dogs will probably end up in rescue between 9 and 18 months. So if you're rehabbing a dog that maybe come to you from rescue, it's fantastic because it helps to also increase the bond. So you can really start to build a relationship with these animals very quickly. And also, it's like, T-Touch is like talking to animals in their own language. We call it an interspecies communication sometimes, because you can really start to get a very deep connection with them. And it's almost like you can think what you want them to do and they'll do it, you know, is before you even ask them to do it. And, you know, all the way through their life stages, even up to old dogs, injured dogs, ill dogs, it's fantastic. Older dogs are really good for mental stimulation and also a bit of pain relief through the body, keeping the body flexible, because we know as they get older they can have less tolerance for exercise, but they're often still mentally there and they can often get quite bored if we don't do something with them. So it just helps them maintain that zest for life. And I work an awful lot as well with spinal injured dogs, because T-Touch works with the neural pathways of the body. For spinal dogs who have got neural damage, it can really help to fire in those neural connections and get them back up and walking. So I work an awful lot with, say, Greyfriars Hydrotherapy and Referral Centre. And we work with combination of the hydrotherapy, the laser work, the physio, the T-Touch. We put it all together and it all becomes really, really powerful. And we've had dogs up and walking that had basically been written off by the vet. So it's just, you know, everything really. And obviously we don't take over the role of the vet, and I would never suggest that, but we can, when working with vets, we can have a really powerful help to in that healing process, along with the traditional medicine or homeopathy, acupuncture, you name it. We can link in with that, and everything working together can just really be powerful.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned there it benefits your relationship with your dog, you know, it bonds you. This is a difficult question, but how do you see it benefiting the dogs? You know, how do you imagine that they are experiencing it from their side?
Well, having had a lot of body work done on myself, because as we learn as practitioners, we often do the work on ourselves so we can feel what it's like, you can get some really powerful feelings from the work. So areas that maybe have felt tight and a bit uncomfortable start to relax. They feel more just more relaxed, more, you can get feelings of being more stimulated, being having pins and needles even. And once you kind of get through that stage where the body's sorting itself out, it's just so calming to have the work done on you. So often what we find is if, for example, a dog is frightened of noises and an unexpected firework goes off or a thunderstorm comes across, we often find the dogs that used to go and den up and hide will actually come to their owners and ask for the work to be done. So we know that they feel a benefit from it, and we know that they feel comforted from it. And it's such a relief for some owners, for example, if their dogs used to bolt from the noises if they were outside. And obviously that's a very scary situation. And what they will often find is the dogs then run to the owners. The owners can just pop them on the lead, start to reassure them with the T-touch work. And the one thing that's different about T-touch from normal petting is that you don't reinforce the behaviour. So you can do the work on them when they're in the fear state, and it doesn't make it worse. So you can really start to help them change that. And it gives you something to do as well. Often we feel as owners very, we don't have anything to do. You know, we feel very distressed because our animals are distressed and we're not allowed to touch them. We shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do that. But you can do T-touch on them. So it just empowers you to be able to help your animal as well. And, you know, my cats at home, bless them, I've got very old cats. And they'll come to you, and it does just be days when they're having a bit of a down day. And you can just see that they're asking for T-touch. You can do some of them. They just feel so much better. They relax. They calm down. They go into deep sleep. So, you know, there's many ways they can tell us that they're really enjoying the work.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. So this isn't something that you have to have, you know, a practitioner in to do. This is something that you can learn to do with your dog.
Absolutely. Lots of people around the country run 1 and 2 day workshops, and that's enough for you to learn enough for your dog. Some people come with specific issues they want to be have helped with. Some people will come just because they want to learn a little bit more about the work so that it can benefit their animals as they grow older or they get new animals. And there's lots of practitioners around the country who do one-to-one sessions with your dog as well. If a workshop isn't appropriate for you or you don't want to have, you know, that level of equipment, you can learn, you know, what you need within an hour's tuition, really. I mean, when I first started to, my very first experience with this work was someone I used to work with, and she just started to tell me about this strange thing she was doing, learning to do on horses. And she did a few touches on myself. She taught me how to do it, and I could really feel the benefit. And that night I went home and I worked on an animal in the house that I lived in at the time and had a big effect on them. So it really doesn't take long. It's not rocket science. You know, you don't have to have healing hands to do it. All you need is an open mind and, you know, and your hands. And everybody can learn to do this work.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned spinal injuries. What other kinds of, you know, problems or conditions or illnesses can Tellington Touch help?
Well, like I say, if we work with the vets, pretty much anything can be achieved. And more vets and more vet nurses are really getting into this work now. We know that it has a pain relief element to it. We've had a human doctor who's used it on her human patients. And when asked how long pain relief was achieved through doing T-touch, the response from the clients was that it was 3 days that they felt better. We know that we can reduce the severity and the frequency of epileptic fits, so that also means that we can reduce the drug intake they have as well. We've worked with dogs with diabetes. We've worked with dogs coming out of surgery that maybe have been in a very deep anaesthetic and having trouble coming in conscious. We've been able to bring them out. Even a simple stroking of the ear can save a life because there's acupressure points in the ear for the whole body. So when you work the ear, you can actually support a dog that's going into shock or already in shock, and it can give you vital minutes to get to the vet. And that can be the difference between life or death. So, lots of things you can be helped with on the medical side. But as I say, it always has to be used in conjunction with your vet.
Yeah, yeah. And can it help a healthy dog? You know, there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with your dog. You know, what are the benefits?
Yeah, definitely. And, it's that bonding. It's that relationship. It's that feeling good, having something lovely to do with each other. And you know what? The owners get just as much out of it as the dogs. It really does help you calm down, and it's a really good way. Also, you know, just because you're touching the dog all over, it gives you a really early indication of anything going on. So even if there's nothing wrong with your dog, but you're doing too touch on them, you might have find a lump much earlier than you would have normally done, because you're really getting in there and exploring the body. You know, you might find a tender part on your dog. Maybe they've had a slight kind of knock in the park that morning and they're a bit sore, but they're not showing it. We know what dogs are like. They never tell us when they're poorly or when they're injured until they're really bad.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's going to be helpful for you. It's going to benefit you. It'll benefit the dog, your relationship. It's just a lovely way of stroking. It's a purposeful stroke rather than a mindless petting, really.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds wonderful. Where can people find out more about Tellington Touch?
Well, there's various websites all the way around the country. Probably the easiest thing to do would become onto my website. And then from there, there's a link to the national website as well. And that's tellingtontouch.co.uk. Mm-hmm. And at the bottom of the screen of the open page, you'll also find the T-Touch T-Team website. And that's the national one. So if you're not in my area, you can click on there and you'll find a practitioner in your area. Everyone on that list is qualified and has been trained by top instructors, so you know that they've got the right training and they're not someone who's done, you know, a weekend workshop and trying to set themselves up as something they're not. So you know they're kind of bona fide, really.
If you'd like to find out more about Tony and Tellington Touch, follow the link to her site from the Dogcast Radio site. Tony is also an education officer and senior wolf handler at UK Wolf Conservation. And she'll be back next time telling us about the wolves she works with. I like a bit of mongrel myself, whether it's a man or a dog. They're the best for every day. George Bernard Shaw. I usually end up writing about my dog, Buddy. But I realised that the other dog in our house has just as much character and interesting behaviour as him. Our Bichon Frise Star has many eccentricities, her main one being an absolute obsession with anything that smells at all of ears. Yes, ears. This first became apparent when she kept eating my husband's earplugs. The first time we discovered an empty chewed-up plastic earplug container, minus its contents of earplugs, we were incredibly worried. Star is a tiny dog. Would the spongy earplugs block up a vital tube somewhere? We watched her closely, but she continued as normal, and there was nothing untoward in her droppings. So, after a couple of days, we chalked it up to experience and forgot about it. Then we found another chewed-up empty container and a happy-looking Star. Again, we worried. Again, without cause. My husband had to store his earplugs higher and higher, but if there was any way she could access them, she would. I had assumed she was attracted by the aroma of my husband's ears alone, but I was proved wrong. When Merle's Door author Ted Kerasotti stayed with us, he accidentally left his earplugs behind. Guess where they ended up? In Star's mouth. This time, I found her before she had managed to ingest them and took them off her. She was disappointed, but accepted the treat I offered in exchange. On another occasion, my daughter left her bag on the floor. Normally, both our dogs have an almost supernatural sense of what they can and can't chew. But this time, Star couldn't control herself. She detected the scent of ears in that bag, and she couldn't resist. She managed to burrow into the bag and draw out that most essential teenage accessory, iPod earphones, which she proceeded to chew. We found the sad remains later, and one thing's for sure, they'll never work again. Buddy does not share this ear fascination, and they are different in other ways. Star learned what Buddy failed to master. If you bark at a door, someone will let you through it. You may have to bark for a while, but sooner or later, barking wears down most humans. She employs this to good effect, and if her barking goes ignored, she steps up to the next level, hurling herself repeatedly against the door. Many days she wants to go out every 5 minutes, or it seems she does at least, but on an irritatingly high proportion of those occasions she changes her mind once the door is opened. It might be too rainy, too dark, too cold, or perhaps she is satisfied that the garden is still there should she want it, but whatever the reason, she changes her mind. She looks up as if to say, "Thank you, you may close it now." I'm sure sometimes she just fancies a break from Buddy, as she will bark at the door urgently. Buddy will pick up her call and be waiting at the door too. When it's opened, he will charge past her, at which point she will watch his retreating form wagging her tail before trotting off with a contented air to enjoy having the couch to herself. Star has a cat-like self-sufficiency. While Buddy always chooses to be with a human companion if possible, Star makes her own decisions. She will take herself off for a nap on her bed in the bedroom if a bit of peace and quiet appeals. This can happen even when we have visitors, a treat Buddy would never tear himself away from. Conversely, if Star wants to be on your lap, she will just march right onto it. There's no pleading pawing at you, no making puppy dog eyes at you, just the assumption that you will welcome her with the appropriate gratitude. After only ever having bigger dogs, it was a surprise, albeit a charming one, to suddenly have one that could walk along and curl up on the back of the couch rather than the seat. With consideration for her small, delicate neck, we always used harnesses to walk Star, although she did wear a very light collar bearing her identification tags. She was often reluctant to go for a walk. She clearly loved the walk once out and about, keeping pace with Buddy and then some. But she would cringe in a corner when approached with her harness. After I started the Kennel Club's Good Citizen scheme, we discussed Jenny taking Star through it, and I realised she would have to have a collar for this. I duly bought one, and we tried it out on the next walk. Star was over 2 years old by this point, and she loved her collar from the moment she slipped into it. From then on, she was ready and waiting for each walk, so long as we produced the collar, not that dreaded harness. I can't explain why she didn't like the harness. It fitted her properly, we were careful not to catch her fur in it, and it was always put on gently. She simply prefers a collar, and now she's conveyed that to us, that is what she wears. Star is not very bothered about food. Not dog food, anyway. She will sit while her dinner bowl is put down. Then she will venture forth to inspect the contents, before glancing up with a reproachful, "Dog food again." However, she adores leftovers. As soon as our plates are carried into the kitchen after a meal, Star is racing ahead, eager for any goodies that might come her way. A particular delicacy for her is a slice of raw carrot, or a small piece of potato peel. With all her idiosyncrasies, she is a charming, cheerful little dog whom we love dearly. She loves us back, on her own terms. Jenny is her number one human, and in second place is my mum. Mum is always holiday caretaker and stays with us a couple of nights a week. Star absolutely adores her. Unfortunately, it is not reciprocated. Mum likes her, of course, but is not into being sat on and licked, besides which her breed of choice is the German Shepherd dog. Star is unperturbed and pursues my mother with a determination and enthusiasm you cannot help but admire. Star's latest obsession is our office swivel chair. Any time it is vacant, she will walk up to it and bark to be placed on it. Then she will wag her tail and paw at you until you swivel her on it. The first time I saw Jenny turning the chair round while Star sat on it, I told her off soundly, telling her she would make the poor dog sick. I should have known better. When it became clear Star loved it, I had to apologise. My daughter is a wonderful doggy mother, and in Star she has raised a wonderful, if extremely individual, doggy child. The Airedale, an unrivalled mixture of brains and clownish wit, the very ingredients one looks for in a spouse. Chip Brown, Connoisseur magazine. We've had some feedback about the new theme music, and mainly the message is that you preferred the old one. Keep letting us know what you think, and we'll make a decision about whether we return to the usual music. Have you checked out the Dogcast Radio blog yet? This is full of information about Dogcast Radio, our dogs Buddy and Star, dog-related news, interesting websites, and occasionally some musings of mine. If you're beginning to struggle with your New Year's resolution, there's a top 10 of resolutions that will improve your dog's life this year on the blog. This includes things like... Well, do you know what? I'll leave you to read that for yourselves. If you've got any observations, websites or news items that you think would fit in well on the blog, do send them in. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What do you call a dog in the Sahara Desert? Lost.